5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. One of two rival Libyan governments says it's disbanding to make way for the new UN-brokered unity government. The Tripoli-based Islamist National Salvation Government issued a statement saying it put the interests of the nation above everything else. But Indiana University regional analyst Abdul Qadir Sino says the real reason is the policy of carrots and sticks by the European Union.
The European countries have made clear signals that they will punish those leaders if they don't play along, and also provided them with incentives. The incentives include to free up billions of dollars who are in a Libyan state fund that have been basically embargoed.
Another Libyan administration in the eastern city of Tobruk has yet to recognize the unity government. The North African country has been in chaos since longtime dictator Muammar Gaddafi was toppled and killed in 2011. Iceland's prime minister resigned Tuesday, the first casualty of the so-called Panama Papers disclosures about hidden offshore investments of the wealthy, powerful, and famous. Leaked files from a Panamanian law firm revealed his wife's ownership of a company in the British Virgin Islands that has more than $4 million in claims against the country's own collapsed banks. The decision followed protests in the street demanding he step down.
We have to do something very strong, definitive, and a very clear message that it is not our character, not in our character. So this fake changes in government is not sufficient for us.
Prime Minister Sigmundur David Gunnlaugsson quit ahead of a planned no-confidence vote in Parliament, with the ruling Progressive Party naming its deputy leader to take over as the country's new leader. This is VOA News. The U.S. says the new ceasefire prevailing in Nagorno-Karabakh appears to be holding. Several days of renewed fighting over the disputed region between Armenia and Azerbaijan left at least 60 dead. It's some of the worst violence since the war ended in 1994. Mark Toner's a U.S. spokesman.
It's a very nascent ceasefire, but we're encouraged that it does seem to have taken hold. And we are actively engaging with both sides to urge them to strictly adhere to the ceasefire.
The current chairman of the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, Germany's foreign minister, Frank-Walter Steinmeier, said the OSCE's immediate effort now must focus on stabilizing the ceasefire, preventing any escalation. The U.S. has officially designated Salah Abdeslam, the main suspect in the 2015 terror attacks in France, as a specially designated global terrorist. It means all property subject to U.S. jurisdiction in which Abdeslam has any interest is blocked, and U.S. persons are generally prohibited from engaging in any transactions with him. Abdeslam accused of helping plan the November 13 terror attacks in Paris that killed 18. He was captured in Belgium March 18th after more than 4 months on the run. In U.S. presidential politics, Texas Senator Ted Cruz cruised to an easy primary election victory late Tuesday in the upper Midwest state of Wisconsin, defeating current Republican Party frontrunner Donald Trump.
Tonight is a turning point. It is a rallying cry. It is a call from the hardworking men and women of Wisconsin to the people of America. We have a choice, a real choice.
On the Democratic side, Socialist Senator Bernie Sanders upended frontrunner Hillary Clinton in Wisconsin as he cut into a wide delegate lead heading into that party's national nominating convention. Tanzania says it's looking into allegations members of its peacekeeping contingent exploited 11 women and girls in the Democratic Republic of Congo, leaving all pregnant, with some already having given birth. Farhan Haq is a UN spokesman.
We can confirm that out of the 11 allegedly abused women, 6 were minors. 7 of the alleged victims have already given birth, and 4 women are still pregnant. They have been referred to UNICEF, which has deployed a team on the ground.
The accused peacekeepers have been detained. They were part of the Force Intervention Brigade stationed in the eastern DRC village of Mavivi. South African President Jacob Zuma has survived an impeachment vote in Parliament following a court ruling that he violated the Constitution. Lawmakers of the African National Congress-dominated National Assembly voted 233 to 143 last week. The Constitutional Court ruled Mr. Zuma failed to pay back public funds used to improve his private residence. Impeachment required a two-thirds majority. The South African leader had survived a March 1st no-confidence vote over his handling of South Africa's economy. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenyans react to ICC's decision to drop charges against Deputy President William Ruto.
There are, of course, people who have been aggrieved since the post-election violence in 2007, but we believe that this is a unifying thing and the country can pull forward together.
Momo Unzao is a Kenyan governance and security analyst. We also get reaction from an international justice expert. South African President Jacob Zuma survives an impeachment vote. A Ugandan official defends the rearrest of opposition leader Kizza Besigye. And West African regional forces free 2,000 Boko Haram captives.
Where I am now, I'm getting better. And I'm determined that when I will be strong, I have to go there because those men, they're not armies, they're just rebels. I hope that by the end of this year, Boko Haram will be history.
Ayon Levis is a Cameroonian wounded soldier returning from the front lines in the fight against Boko Haram. And the World Health Organization says global health emergencies are on the rise. Those stories plus Mark Oldman, Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The International Criminal Court on Tuesday terminated its case against Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto. Ruto had been facing charges for his alleged role in the deadly violence that followed Kenya's disputed 2007 elections. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Nairobi on the reaction to the ruling in Kenya.
On a 2-1 vote, ICC judges ruled there was insufficient evidence to continue the case against Ruto and his co-defendant, broadcaster Joshua Arap Sang. Ruto and Sang had been charged with 3 counts of crimes against humanity for acts allegedly committed during the 2007-2008 post-election violence in Kenya. Kenyans who spoke to VOA generally welcomed the ruling. Taxi operator Shaban Njoroge said terminating the case was the right decision.
I think our nation is healed now because after 2007 elections, we were divided. And God gave us 2 brothers, Ruto and Uhuru. He has united us all in Kenya. So we are very grateful. We are very happy. We are praying our country to go forward.
Okiya Omtata has been clamoring for the cases at the ICC to be dropped. For him, the ruling was welcome.
So the question of political responsibility would have been President Mwai Kibaki and then Prime Minister Raila Odinga, who were vying for seats, and these are the people who should have been taken to task. They were never taken to task because of political considerations. And so having gone for the middle-level people, we felt was injustice from day one.
Speaking to VOA, governance and security strategist Mumo Nzau says the country and affected communities can now focus on rebuilding peace.
There are, of course, people who have been aggrieved since the post-election violence in 2007, but we believe that this is a unifying thing and the country can pull forward together.
However, Samuel Muhochi, executive director at the International Commission of Jurists, spoke to VOA moments after the ruling and said victims of the post-election violence are likely to be disappointed.
Their quest for justice will have been nipped in the bud. The victims will never get to know their truth on what really transpired.
Out of the 6 people considered by the ICC judges to bear the highest responsibility for the atrocities, only Ruto and Arap Sang reached the trial stage of the judicial process. The charges against the other 4, including President Uhuru Kenyatta, were withdrawn due to lack of evidence. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
An international human rights lawyer says one lesson to draw from the International Criminal Court's decision to drop its case against Kenyan Deputy President William Ruto is the apparent effort by the Kenyan government to intimidate prosecution witnesses. The Kenyan government has denied any alleged witness intimidation. Richard Dicker, director of the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch, says the lesson for the ICC is to do a better job at protecting witnesses while realizing it is never going to be easy to indict officials who command the state security machinery.
I think the case against William Ruto and Joshua Tsang will be remembered for the apparent effort to intimidate and bribe witnesses who had come forward to offer testimony in court against the accused. Many Kenyans had supported accountability for the crimes that unfolded after the election in 2007-2008. I've got to believe that their hopes for justice are likely to disintegrate on the heels of today's decision.
But Mr. Dicker, can it be said also, as some of the judges on the court said, that perhaps the case fell apart because of the inability of the prosecution to prove its case?
Well, ultimately, James, you're right. Because the prosecutor had been unable, as the judges found, to put together sufficient evidence to continue the trial. But that was because we believe the intensive, deliberate campaign to intimidate witnesses.
Can we say that the dismissal of the case against Ruto is a setback to the, say, prosecutor Bensouda or the ICC?
Well, I think first and foremost, it's a setback for all those in Kenya who look to the ICC to provide some kind of justice after the Kenyan system failed to do its job in 2008 and in subsequent years. I do think certainly it's a setback for Prosecutor Fatou Bensouda, but I think for both the prosecutor and the court, there are important, if not essential, lessons to be learned, first and foremost, about efforts at better protecting witnesses who do come forward and offer evidence to the prosecutor. I think that it is incumbent on the court and its prosecutor to really recognize the challenges that are involved in indicting officials who command the state security apparatus and are in an unparalleled position to intimidate and bribe witnesses.
Richard Dicker is the director of the International Justice Program at Human Rights Watch. He was speaking with me from New York City. South African President Jacob Zuma survived an impeachment vote on Tuesday, with about 60% of lawmakers voting to keep him in office. Opposition parties presented the impeachment motion after a court ruled that Zuma had ignored an order to pay back state funds spent on his private home. As Tuso Kumalo reports for VOA from Johannesburg, tempers ran hot as parliament members debated the motion.
An hour into the parliamentary session Tuesday, lawmakers were yet to discuss the motion to impeach President Jacob Zuma. Lawmakers were instead trading arguments and insults over the opposition's demands that the National Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete recuse herself. The leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, Julius Malema, summed up opposition concerns about the speaker.
We cannot discuss Zuma with you presiding over this matter. You were there. You messed up this case. You want to continue messing it up.
The debate comes less than a week after the Constitutional Court ordered Zuma to pay back part of the $16 million in public funds used for upgrades to his private home last year. The court said the president violated the Constitution by disregarding the public protector's recommendations for him to pay for non-security-related features built using these funds. The court also found fault with Parliament. A parliamentary committee had said Zuma did not need to repay the money. The Constitutional Court said lawmakers failed to hold the executive to account. In a national televised speech Friday, Zuma apologized. Opposition parties want Zuma removed from office, but do not have the two-thirds majority vote in Parliament to impeach him. the ruling ANC party has rallied around the president. Coming out of a strategic session Monday, ANC Secretary General Gwede Mantashe made it clear that his party is ready to use its majority to oppose the impeachment motion.
If they want to have motions because it makes sense for them and it gives them public attention, then fine, we can't stop them from doing it.
But there are signs of cracks within Zuma support base. The Army Union, ANC war veterans, and former senior government officials are some of those who have called for Zuma to go. Political analyst Sanusha Naidu says defending Zuma will be damaging for ANC members of parliament.
You've got domestic public opinion on the outside as well. And so it's going to be a difficulty because those that are going to try and circumvent it have to make sure that they really want to do this in a public standing in the way that they want to.
The Democratic Alliance Party is calling on ANC lawmakers to break ranks and back impeachment. The Economic Freedom Fighters Party says if the motion fails in parliament, they will take to the streets. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Today's Wednesday, April 6th, you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barton in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 and a half minutes past the hour. Cameroon says regional forces have arrested more than 300 Boko Haram fighters and freed at least 2,000 people in the first 5 days of an operation to flush the terrorists from their remaining hideouts along the borders with Cameroon, Chad, and Niger. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the town of Mora in northern Cameroon.
Saying they scored a major victory against Boko Haram terrorists, 1,000 soldiers returned from the Walasash area in Nigeria to their base at Mora, Cameroon. Cameroon General Buba Dobekreyo, one of the commanders of the regional armed forces of Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Cameroon, says hundreds of Boko Haram fighters were killed or arrested and 2,000 people in 17 villages freed. He says the soldiers destroyed a Boko Haram logistic base and training center, vehicles and motorcycles, and seized huge stocks of weapons and other war equipment. He says they are ready to go further into the hinterlands and completely do away with Boko Haram. Among the returning soldiers is Eyong Levis, who says he and five other soldiers were wounded by a landmine.
Where I am now, I'm getting better, and I'm determined that when I'll be strong, I have to go there because those men, they're not armies, they're just rebels, and I'm determined to finish with them. I hope that by the end of this year, Boko Haram will be history.
Hundreds of Nigerian refugees were sent to the Minawawa refugee camp in Cameroon. Raids organized by the joint forces since December have increased the number of internally displaced persons and refugees in Cameroon from 150,000 to more than 200,000. More than 1,000 humanitarian workers have also been deployed to attend to the refugees and internally displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mora, Cameroon.
The Ugandan government is defending the rearrest of opposition leader and former presidential candidate in the February 18 election, Kizza Besigye, of the Forum for Democratic Change. Uganda's Electoral Commission declared President Yoweri Museveni the winner of the election, but Besigye and his supporters believe he was the true winner. Besigye had been under house arrest for 47 days since the election. Last week, the police withdrew a siege of Dr. Besigye's home. But Besigye was arrested again Tuesday while en route to attend his party's weekly prayers to the cheers of his supporters. Ugandan Information Minister Jim Muwezi denies Dr. Besigye was rearrested, but he says the police stopped Dr. Besigye because he was about to participate in an illegal gathering.
Dr. Besigye was not arrested and is not under arrest, but I understand that he was involved in an unauthorized meeting and the police stopped him, and maybe they heard him and stopped him from holding an unauthorized gathering, but he was released.
the way we understand, was Dr. Besigye was going to attend his party's regular prayers, and he was met by his supporters. Is that an unauthorized meeting?
No, he left his house intending ostensibly to go to for prayers, but he ended up in a crowd gathering, addressing people and so on, which amounted to an unauthorized gathering. So perhaps the excuse of going for prayers was a cover-up for the intentions of having a gathering which was not authorized.
Mr. Minister, what is it when a citizen of Uganda is not allowed to move around freely to, say, meet with people that he wants to meet with? What kind of society is that?
The society of Uganda has got laws that govern it. It's not only Dr. Besigye, it's any person who decides to have a gathering or a rally or a public audience. He must agree with police where he is going to have it, because I don't think there is any way in the world where you can decide to have a rally in people's houses, in people's gardens, in the market. You can't have a rally on the street because people are doing business, are doing their work. You disrupt them. That's why Parliament passed a law that if you are going to have a public rally or gathering, you agree with the police in advance so that they agree that this place is good for you to go and meet and so on and so forth.
It's not clear to people like us on the outside who is more popular in Uganda. Is it Dr. Besigye or is it President Museveni? Because the way the police are keeping a watch on Dr. Besigye, it seems to me he is a threat.
If someone is popular, does it require police? I think the issue of popularity was settled on the 18th of February when we had the elections and the people of Uganda decided.
Retired Major General Jim Owezi is Uganda's Minister of Information and National Guidance. He was speaking with me from the capital, Kampala. The World Health Organization says more than 125 million people are living in crisis-affected countries. The WHO is appealing for $2.2 billion to come to terms with an escalating health crisis. As Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva, the UN agency says it plans to provide life-saving health care to 87 million people in more than 30 countries.
The World Health Organization says the three greatest emergencies are Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. In Syria, the agency says 11.5 million people need essential medicines, primary health care, as well as trauma care and mental health care. The WHO says special care for mothers and children, as well as essential medicine and other health care, are needed by more than 7 million people in Iraq and 10.6 million in Yemen. It also says the focus of aid for 2.3 million people in South Sudan will be on combating child mortality by preventing and treating malaria, diarrhea, and pneumonia. Rick Brennan is WHO's Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response. He tells VOA these are priority countries racked by division and violence.
The incredible devastation that those events have had on the health sector, destruction of health infrastructure, loss of staff, disruption of health programs like vaccination programs and so on. I think the other issue is that none of these emergencies are going away anytime soon. So we have to shift the way that we think about providing assistance there, not only to meeting the acute needs, but working with partners on the ground to increase their resilience and their capacity to provide assistance.
Brennan says natural disasters also are of concern. He cites the health consequences of the El Nino weather phenomenon on countries such as Ethiopia, where some 400,000 children are suffering acute malnutrition. In addition, he says the UN agency and its partners are responding to sudden onset emergencies such as Cyclone Winston that hit Fiji in February, epidemics such as the Zika virus in Brazil, a severe outbreak of yellow fever in Angola, the worst in 30 years, and the remaining risks of Ebola in West Africa. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Tunisia hosts Ghana in Ouad Elil in the second round of the 2016 Africa Women's Cup of Nations qualifiers today, Wednesday. Zimbabwe welcome Zambia to Harare, while Mali are at home to Equatorial Guinea in Bamako. In Switzerland, FIFA President Gianni Infantino has strenuously denied involvement in corrupt deals while at the European football governing body UEFA, he told the media in Zurich, Switzerland on Tuesday. Infantino's problems emerge from the recent disclosures in Panama called the Panama Papers. According to the Panama Papers, contracts co-signed by Infantino as UEFA Director of Legal Services between 2003 and 2006 link UEFA to a company called Cross Trading, which is hugely implicated in the unfolding FIFA corruption scandal that has brought down the disgraced former FIFA president, Sepp Blatter. Cross Trading is a subsidiary of Full Play owned by Hugo Jinkies, who is implicated in a South American ring of corruption in football. The United States Department of Justice prosecutors uncovered evidence that Jinkies is implicated in massive bribing of football executives. Jinkies and his son Mariano are under house arrest in Argentina. UEFA also signed deals with Traffic Sports Europe, a Brazilian company indicted by the United States Justice Department. In his defense in Zurich on Tuesday, Infantino says he has never had any personal contact with the companies Cross Trading or Traffic Sports Europe. In table tennis, Nigeria joined the rest of the world in celebrating the World Table Tennis for All in Lagos, Nigeria today, Wednesday. The day is set aside by the United Nations and the International Olympic Committee as a day to highlight sports for development and peace. Meanwhile, a six-member contingent of under-17 and under-20 Nigerians compete in a week-long international table tennis junior circuit starting today in the Algerian capital, Algiers. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, April 6.
Hello, President Muhammadu Buhari. Government will continue to complain about the past Nigerian leaders, including himself, who had served in a military capacity some years ago before he will face the challenges facing Nigeria economy. Albert Alagbo, former Budu Kato Ranch Vegetable Award in Obaniko local government area of Cross River State, Nigeria. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Tanzania says it will promptly investigate allegations that several of its troops sexually abuse women and girls in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where its soldiers are UN peacekeepers. And that's it for this Wednesday, April 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Oman, along with our engineer Carl Sterling, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the role of development partners in promoting democracy and good governance in Africa. Join host Shaka Sali and his guests next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.